The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, it's Payne. I'm really excited to introduce a brand new show to Bet the Board that combines sports and alternative investing, the very first of its kind. Sports betting and collectibles converging is inevitable. Let me tell you why. Sports cards and memorabilia are another way to get money into the market and do it without limit restrictions or the substantial hold you're accustomed to with sports betting. Whether you collected cards as a kid and are looking to get back into the hobby, this podcast is for you. If you've been collecting cards for years, this podcast will make you think and operate more efficiently. Are you in real estate? The parallels to investing in sports cards and memorabilia are uncanny. You're on Wall Street. Well, listen close. The best sports cards have outperformed the S&P 500 by 6x since 2013. And during the 2008 market crash, sports cards held up better than the S&P 500. Bet the Board, in conjunction with PWCC, presents Cardboard Chat, an entertaining, sophisticated, and informative podcast that combines sports, analytics, betting, cards, and memorabilia. Without further ado, this is Cardboard Chat with Jesse Craig, a leading figure in the collectible space, and me, Payne.
How's your bracket looking?
I only did one this year, and my champion is still alive. Let's just put it that way.
Well, one bracket's a good sign. You're a man of integrity.
Yes. One and done. I actually have Tennessee winning it all, so we'll see what happens.
Really? Okay. So you'll do quite well if they pull it off and they
exactly
about a five. That was kind of the over FAU.
That was kind of the theory this year. It's like, okay, I don't getting into the nitty gritty of, you know, 8 and 9 seeds beating each other. I have no idea, but I'm going to pick a champion that I don't think a lot of people are. And if they do win, then guess what? I'll probably win.
I like the strategy. I like the strategy. Plus, I mean, that was the wild region to begin with, and you couldn't have hoped for anything more, I guess, other than playing Fairleigh Dickinson here. But, you know, you got Sparty potentially as a 7 seed, their favorite over Kansas State heading into the Sweet 16. So, I mean, that's as good as you could have hoped for. They survived the opening round. You got a little sweat there, and then they just out-physical Duke.
Yep, I totally agree. Yeah, it's an interesting tournament. I love now, I mean, outside of Tennessee losing, I'm just rooting for upsets left and right. It's fun to watch. I love it.
Beautiful. Okay. I think this is a very interesting topic we're going to discuss here. I had something in mind, and then you sent over some notes, and I'm like, ooh, I like that. I think our viewpoint might be a little bit different, but we're going to talk maybe a little higher level here on why it's important to diversify your collection or card portfolio or collectible portfolio. I'm going to let you lead the way here. Give some thoughts, give some ideas, give some help to some of our listeners and divulge some of your thinking on that.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting topic for this week with the fluctuations we've seen in the space, you know, myself getting a back seat and having visibility to, you know, individuals going through portfolio shuffling or collection shuffling or getting crushed because they weren't diversified or other people being safe because they were. So I have kind of a unique perspective on a lot of this. And, you know, there's kind of two paths here. One of them is if you're in this for the pure joy and passion of the hobby and money doesn't really matter to you, and then the money side of it or the ROI side of it is just a bonus at the end of the day, then it doesn't really matter. Buy whatever the hell you like, have fun doing it, and don't worry about it. And the chips fall where they may, and this is your hobby. No different than, you know, there's no ROI when you go play golf, right? Like, you know, money's going down the tube.
Plus frustration. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to quit because of that. Couldn't get off the tee box. Haven't played in 4 years. There you go. Cold.
That's a problem to be good at golf, is getting off the tee box. So, you know, I get to see a lot of different stuff. If you are not in it for the pure joy of collecting and you are in it for the ROI potential, which I think a lot of newer people in the space are, and that's where we're going to get a lot of people coming into the space as well, because they see opportunity. They'll enjoy it, and it's a fun way to make money or try to make money or to hustle and buy and sell as a hobby. But if, you know, money is in mind, then you need to be more careful. So, you know, I've seen people who had a predominantly ultra modern and modern collection get absolutely crushed in the last 6 months, right? You need to be able to look at what you want as an individual from a risk perspective and your portfolio and figure out what makes sense for you. So when I look at a well-balanced collection or portfolio, it's somewhere along the lines of, you know, call it between 50 and 70% vintage, because vintage is more stable. It's just a fact. You know that. I know that. The guys are, you know, either dead or retired, and there's not as much that can happen to drastically change the value of their assets like there can be with modern players. But so I'd look at heavy vintage, you know, maybe a good chunk of 90s cards. You know, you've got 90s inserts and some big name players from the 90s that are now retired. So those are some, you know, some good guys to have in your portfolio. And then maybe you mix in, you know, 20% give or take modern and ultra modern stuff where you want to take a little bit of risk because you like the player. Maybe he's on his way out of the league. Maybe he is new to the league and you're more speculative on him, but you really believe in him. You know, so having your portfolio diverse, it makes it less volatile and you're less susceptible to, you know, things happening to players, things happening to leagues, you know, economic changes, things like that. So I would, if I'm somebody and I'm looking at what I have in my collection, that's what I would look at, is how well versed am I? How well rounded am I in what I'm really doing?
I thought we were going to be vastly different in thought, and maybe it's because I view the term diversified in this space a little bit differently, right? Like, we all love the theory of being diversified, right? It sounds great. Makes you feel sophisticated and all. And, sure. You know, it's like, it's vital with stocks, right? Tech, agriculture, energy, healthcare, beverages. There's a gazillion more sectors. So it's hard to be an expert in all of them and have an edge. It's why I think all of us, or the vast majority of us, right, pay someone to manage our money, our investment accounts. With sports, you know, I love being diversified, but it's within a singular sector. And, you know, this is just part of it, right? Overarching focus is investing. And, you know, we've kind of spawned this thing into betting games, you know, real money, providing sports betting information publicly via subscription, delivering, you know, sports betting information publicly via content. So the same sector has multiple rev streams, but it's not overly diversified, right? It's like focusing on one specific avenue and thinking, how can I earn off virtually the same thing? As I kind of like take this back to the actual topic of sports cards, I'll be candid. Like, if I hopped in my time machine and went back to 2016 with the exact dollars I've allocated in the space now, I'm not diversifying as much as you think, but I heard exactly the focus points that you put on display there. And I'm thinking, like, I agree with all of that. I just didn't really think it was diversifying, right? Like, if I want to be deeper on the best stuff and not as broad as I initially did. And I think, you know, we're in 2023 now, and there's more data and there's more sophistication, and collectors and investors are now like, some of this is like their prevalent line of work more than ever, you know? And it's like, to me, the most investable players in brands and assets are more clear cut now than ever before. And I think you can kind of make the case if you wake up in like 15, 20, 30 years and all you've purchased at this very moment was a couple of things, starting with, to your point, vintage, handful of key sets, a couple handful of players across those key sets in baseball, basketball, football. Then it's 90s inserts, right? Specifically PMG's credentials, a couple years of rubies, right? And you're just focusing on two or three sports, a couple game use pieces of three to five guys, whether that's physical game used pieces like sneakers or jerseys or game used cards from, you know, about an 8 year window from like 96 to 04. That's all you would need. And I think you could accomplish that in probably less than 100 total assets. Now, I think it's interesting. Like, it's a great conversation because other cards are going to go over that same time frame and earn, right? There's no doubt about that. But if like a 1952 Topps mantle isn't increasing long term, neither is the third best card in that set, right? Like if a Michael Jordan PMG isn't increasing, then neither is the fourth best player in that set,
right?
And
right.
Kind of the same thing, right? Like T206, like Honus Wagner, as that continues to set a new record every time one becomes available, like Ty Cobb's increasing, right? Like I just think this is really interesting. But if like suddenly buying Michael Jordan game used pieces like sneakers and jerseys and a handful of uniforms just completely bombs, nobody's going to care about a Steph Curry signed mouthpiece, right? So it's like, I like the theory of being diversified, especially in other spaces, but I feel like I'd much rather have multiple copies and just go deeper on some of these items that I've bought rather than kind of being really broad, if that makes sense.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a house. It's your home, the place that's filled with memories. The early days of figuring it out, to the later years of still figuring it out. For the place you've put down roots, trust Amica Home Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
Yeah, I get it. And diversification is a broad word in general, right? And it can be looked at in many different ways. But, you know, for your collection or your portfolio, I guess the example would be, well, first of all, there's always risk, right? There's risk in any investment you ever make in anything. So for you, it's like, what if Jeter came out as a, you know, what if there was a domestic abuse case against Jeter and it was nasty?
Or steroid
right? Like,
user.
Right, or steroids or something like that. Or like Ichiro all of a sudden is running a, you know, a child ring of, you know, labor
in
shops
Japan.
In Japan or something like that. Right. So like there's always a risk of something like that. Look what happened with Brett Favre, right? If you were a huge Brett Favre investor,
right,
you know, not that his stuff was worth a ton.
No. I immediately sold one of my pieces.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like it definitely affected the value of his assets. So I think it's just depends on what you consider diverse and just trying to protect yourself. If you go too heavy into one player or too heavy into one brand per se, then you are exposing yourself a little bit more than if you were more diverse. But once again, if you believe in it and you're right, there's usually more upside. So it's just a balance.
You said vintage is the where you should be allocating some of your dollars within your portfolio. And I think that's a perfect time to transition here.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. It's time, folks. That's right. We're going to discuss undervalued and overvalued cards, or maybe even some memorabilia assets, potentially some players. Is it time to buy, sell, or hold on to these assets or players? We'll give you some opinions and back it up.
We're going to let you lead off with your undervalued play of the week. And I absolutely love this because I think the mission statement's pretty clear here, that rare assets becoming even more rare are something to truly think about, and it's in the form of vintage cards. Talk to us a little bit about what your mindset is on your play this week.
Yeah, so the play this week for undervalued, and this segment has the markets kind of pulled back a bit. I feel like every week it's undervalued these days. So that trend is going to continue. Undervalued is signed vintage rookie cards. I absolutely love these. I love the story that's behind each of them. The thought of it's likely a kid that got one of these players to sign it in person at a game back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever it may be. I love the history side of getting an autograph on a piece of cardboard when back then it was just a collector's item, right? People used it for different things. They'd put it in their bike spokes. They would, tape them to booklets. They would glue them to booklets. It would do all sorts of different things with them. So when you're thinking about value and rarity, you have to consider vintage signed rookies as one of them. So depending on the example, these go for like 3 to 5x. It's kind of like the rough gauge I have from a value perspective over the same grade without an autograph. And that is assuming that the autograph is good and not terrible, but also not, perfect, right? Kind of an average autograph. That delta is way too low in my opinion. Let's use the 51 Bowman Mays, for example. There have been almost 2,200 copies that have been graded by PSA for the 51 Bowman Mays. Only 28 have ever been authenticated by PSA DNA with an autograph on it. Only 28. That's wild to me. You know how rare that is? In any grade, of any auto grade, they're just so rare in general. You know, I've actually heard some true collectors say they hate signed vintage cards. And I think that is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in the history of me being in this space. And I've heard it firsthand, and I think it's just absolutely wild because that creates so much more rarity to me, right? Like, that makes the card so much more attractive. We talk about these modern cards and how we hate sticker autos because we know that just, one of these athletes had a sheet of stickers thrown in front of him. He signed a bunch of them. They sent it back to Topps or whoever, and they slapped them on a card, and now that card has an autograph on it. And the player didn't actually touch the card themselves. Well, the same scenario, in my opinion, goes for vintage cards. How much cooler is it that this card from the 50s, Mays actually touched it? He actually signed it. There is a story around that specific scenario. It's even more impressive than any recent manufacturing where they send a guy, for on-card autos even, send the guy a stack of cards to sign in the mail, and they send them back. You got guys at ballparks getting autographs from players. So I think long-term, obviously a lot of these guys have passed away, depending on what you're collecting or investing in. And the rarity, the supply is going to stay fixed. So the demand for these are going to drastically increase, in my opinion, in the future. And that is, in my opinion, one of the most undervalued things maybe in our entire space.
I couldn't agree more. People are starting to catch on because we've seen it take shape with modern cards, right? How do I make an iconic card rare? And the one or two that are at the forefront of my brain here is like the 2011 Topps update Mike Trout.
Yep.
Right. There's like nearly 6,000 PSA 10s. And I had a buddy who kind of was the first on this wave. And I had a couple of them. And it's like, let's throw an autograph on it because it only costs $450 to like $600 to get Trout's autograph. And then, let's add an inscription to make it even more rare.
Yep.
Mike Trout publicly will no longer sign the 2011 Topps update card as of now, to my knowledge. We'll see if that changes, but making 400 plus million, there really isn't a need to sign that. And you see, I think there's only 39 PSA 1010s there's almost 6,000 just regular PSA 10s. We saw something very similar take shape over the last 18 months or so with the 89 Upper Deck Ken Griffey Jr. rookie. I mean, that's one of the most recognizable ever. The problem with the Griffey rookie is there isn't that fixed amount that you alluded to, right? There's so many. And Griffey's signing so much right now that you could kind of project how this would end. I mean, the first time a PSA 10 with a 10 auto grade came to auction, it was actually you guys. Okay.
Yep.
It was a pop one. The guy that won it certainly didn't think about the two key factors of overpopulated car and Griffey signing at a rate that would make you think he was living under a bridge.
Sure.
But, you know, it sold for like 50K. And now you fast forward to present day, there's 64 PSA 1010s.
Is there that many now?
Yes. And they sell for about $8,000. But I think you actually had the perfect example because I wrote down this example. And Jesse and I will kind of do an outline before, but we don't include our notes in the outline. But I think what's awesome about this is you hit it perfectly. Like the players are no longer signing, right? They're not with us anymore. And I thought the perfect example was arguably the most popular name in baseball all time is Mickey Mantle, right? The 1952 top set, likely the most recognizable baseball set of all time. Mickey Mantle was, you know, signing a ton later on in life. But at the time we're recording this, PSA's graded 1,905 copies of the 52 Topps Mickey Mantle. 18 of them have been autographed.
That's
okay?
insane.
It's so absolutely crazy. Nuts. So I'm with you on that. And I just think, you know, evolution, the idea of these continuing to enhance in value is just going to bring more investors into that sector of the market. And I think long term, it's a really interesting play. Plus, it's just, you know, you see how these cards are signed, right? It's like, you know, might be the first Bic pen ever, which is very different than what we see cards autographed with now.
It is. And there's another example I have that's kind of interesting. So there is a Joe Montana dual PSA 10 that exists that is incredible. Thinking about, I mean, there's 109 PSA 10s of Joe Montana without autographs, and there's only one that is a dual 10. And it's with a kind of a really nice pen, and it was done really well. And there's a guy named Mark Mader that owns it, and he actually bought it privately through me a couple years ago. And he's on IG. If you ever want to follow a guy that, you know, sees things usually before other people do, he's a guy to watch. He's, you know, in a bunch of different things, but and a great guy and a great client. But he owns the dual 10 Joe Montana. I mean, think about how rare that is. I mean, it's hard to get a PSA 10 Montana in general, right? It's 81 was a tough cardboard year from what they used condition wise. There's been almost 26,000 of those graded 1981 Topps football, and only 109 PSA 10s that exist. And there's only one dual 10. There's been over 500 and something that have been signed and graded, and only one has gotten a PSA 10. So it's a very condition sensitive card. So there's plays here too, as well, is what I'm getting at from a dual PSA 10 perspective, or even a 9 with a 10 autograph, you know, whatever it may be. There's value plays here for the future when you really look at these cards and break it down, because like you said on the Griffey, well, if you're really thinking about it, yeah, he does sign a lot, and it's easy to get a PSA 10 on an 89 Upper Deck Griffey. So buying the first dual PSA 10 to come to market probably wasn't the smartest idea, you know. But if you look at a card like an 81 Topps Joe Montana,
right.
I mean, that card in general is very difficult to get a PSA 10, let alone a dual PSA 10. It's nearly impossible. So there's plays there. I mean, I think PSA 9s with a 10 autograph for Montanas would be a great play. You know, there. So you can find value in all sorts of different issues, but make sure, to your point from the Griffey perspective, you look at kind of the macro world of it as well, and make sure that you're not buying something that the population could increase drastically over time.
The gentleman you mentioned, is he into tickets?
He is.
He's got a card that I'm quite interested in, a Babe Ruth. I might have to have you do some reconnaissance there for you. Speaking of Montana, this is really an interesting story. We're just going far left here. Nick Montana, product of Tulane football, was actually into the gambling space and was trying to get us to promote one of his products. Never came to fruition, but
interesting
nonetheless. My undervalued play, and it's so interesting how this kind of all materializes as I think back, like 3 weeks ago, or three episodes ago, rather, you were saying Tom Brady was undervalued. last week or maybe the week prior, we talked about the Mirror Gold to 35 copies. And this kind of punches home the point I was making earlier that I kind of want to go deeper in certain things that just have less risk. And so the card that I've identified this week as being undervalued is the 2000 Bowman Chrome Refractor Tom Brady. Brady's first refractor ever.
Yep.
Bowman Chrome, big brand. We know Brady's the GOAT, although trajectory, Patrick Mahomes currently at this juncture in his career outperforming what Brady had to this point in his career. If you look at the 2000 Bowman Chrome set, 207 cards total, 105 rookies, the refractors were short printed. And you can see that in the grading data. PSA is only graded 142, Beckett 258, and SGC 11 of this Brady refractor. There's probably actually far less than that number, knowing people now crack and resubmit.
Cracking stuff out. Yeah.
Yep. And now the market's dipped on these, right? Specifically PSA 9s. They're selling for about 25% of their peak in 2021. There's only 59 PSA 9s. It's, you know, again, off season. Brady relatively quiet. I think this, you know, again, just this selection very much depicts my belief at the top. I want to buy deeper on the very best players on a handful of their better cards, wake up in 10, 15, 20, 30 years and just see where we're at. So I really think at some point here, you know, in the off season, making a play for a Bowman Chrome refractor Tom Brady rookie is something that will be very fruitful a decade plus from now.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong with the GOAT, especially when you're buying something that is at, like you mentioned, 25% of peak pricing. I believe it's only a pop 7 PSA 10. That's just off the top of my head. I actually,
you're bang on. Yeah,
It's just a really hard card to find a PSA 10. One didn't sell for years and years and years. A couple have surfaced in the last few months, I believe. I know we sold one of them. But it's just a really difficult card to get well-centered, and then there's all sorts of edge issues on it as well. But if you're in this space and you buy football or basketball or anything, and you've been buying and selling, you've seen these cards, you know how important this card is. It is Brady's most important non-autographed rookie that exists. And I think it's a great pick. I like buying stuff when you feel like it's near the bottom. If you look at kind of the pricing chart, you know, the absolute bottom was $48K on a PSA 9 Bowman Chrome Refractor Brady. One just sold recently for $50,000, so it's, you know, up a hair. But I see these trending up over the next 3 to 5 years drastically, because it is just a hard card to find in general, and it's a critically important card for football.
I think what's very interesting, and I kind of take a page out of the sports betting book when I look at key numbers in the NFL, and you're kind of gauging asymmetric risk. And, you know, go back to like 2015, these cards were selling for about $9,000 in PSA 9. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it scares people when we're like, hey, this is going for like 25% of what it was 2 years ago. But you kind of look long term and you're like, well, they're still selling for roughly $50,000 in 2023. They've more than 5X'd over the last 7 years. And that's the thing no one wants to talk about, right? It's the dip within the last 18 to 24 months, both within the space and ancillary factors outside of the space, but long term over the last 7 years, like, you know, 5.5X. So yep. I think that's interesting when you kind of gauge that asymmetric risk. Let's say you go in, you buy a 9 for $45K, and the worst thing in the world happens is we get back to a market that's 2015. And this mm-hmm. shoots down to $10,000. Okay, that would suck. But when you gauge the risk-reward factor, well, I think we believe 3 to 5 years from now, this space is going to be pretty close to where it was humming in 2021. Yep. And all of a sudden, that $50,000 play is, you know, back to $200,000. And so you're kind of using that and gauging that asymmetric risk. Well, you know, might lose $40,000. Well, you know, could go up 150. So I think that's really interesting to think about it in terms of, yeah, you know, some dicey waters right now. But the asymmetric risk, I think, far outweighs like making a play rather than dumping one right now for sure.
Pick a number, any number, whatever it may be. We got a number inside, but we want a magic number. All right, this is where we're going to pick a few big cards that enter an auction over the next couple of days, and we're going to try and guess how much they sell for in advance. Throw out a number. We got one, too.
Three interesting cards this week for Magic number, and I was racking my brain a little bit on some of these. Very difficult. Let's just put it that way. We got some modern-day cards of rookies. We have a card that does not sell very often. And we have a vintage Laker card, which is near and dear to your heart a little bit. So let's start there. Let's start with the 1986 Fleer sticker Kareem Abdul-Jabbar PSA 9. This comes with the exceptional PWCC designation for eye appeal, meaning it's in the top 15% of all mint nines. The centering's fantastic. Talk to us a little bit about this card, maybe the importance of the set, and give us your best guess. You're on the tee box, sir.
Oh, that's scary. Hope I can get off the tee box. this card is the lowest pop of any card for all of 1986 Fleer or Fleer stickers in PSA 10. It's only a pop 14. And if you've done research, if you've done research on this card, you know that it goes for a couple hundred grand when it sells in a PSA 10. But they're very difficult to find. Set collectors look for this card left and right because it's the one that escapes them. I've seen a decent amount of PSA 10s. In my opinion, this card could easily 10. I mean, it's slightly cockeyed, slightly, but it is a beautiful, beautiful copy in a PSA 9. And with 10s going for over $200,000, you know, whatever this sells for is going to be a bargain in comparison, which from an eye appeal perspective looks every bit the part of a PSA 10, and I guarantee you is nicer than a handful of 10s that exist today. This does have a PWCCE, and you know, typically these without the PWCC sticker sell for around $4,000, but this one being as pretty as it is, maybe there's an arbitrage play for someone to try to bump it to a PSA 10. Look, because of the political nature of it, I don't advise you doing that. I don't think it's going to ever happen. They're basically just handing you a six-figure check if they bump that. They'll take their six pieces of silver, but they don't typically like doing that. So I do have this card going pretty drastically over what a normal PSA 9 would sell for. I've got this one at $7,212.
Interesting. Okay. To your point, like, you look at this card, it is beautiful, fantastic centering, minimal to no hourglassing, which kind of makes some of these cards look a little funky with this set. Huge set that we've talked about all the time, right? 1986 Fleer basketball. You have just nothing but iconic players, key rookies like Jordan, Barkley, Malone, Dominique, Drexler, Patrick Ewing. This Kareem sticker is awesome because of the action shot, right? It's that the famous sky hook.
It's the hook.
On the photography. And I think the photography is better than the base image where he's like kind of attempting
it's
to
way,
post up and
way
receive
better.
The entry pass. Yeah, he doesn't even have the ball. The stickers are somewhat condition sensitive, as you alluded to, only 277 PSA 9s. So I know a decent amount of these have sold recently, four alone at PWCC since December. The last e-sticker PSA 9 Kareem sold for $5,040 on December 11th. You're at 7,800, did you say?
7,200.
That's actually a really good number here. I'm going to come in a touch below you. The e-sticker makes me a little concerned going lower than this. I was in the sixes, but I kind of want to leave a gap here with vintage. I was going to come in nestled under you, but let's leave a little bit of a gap here just for the sportsmanship of this. Let's go with 6,600. On the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar sticker for me. The next one. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would not be shocked if the card finished between the two of us. I think that's kind of right in the ballpark.
Yeah, that's I was coming in a little higher. It's vintage is interesting because, as a lot of our listeners know by now, like the delta between like our guesses is much smaller than I think what we're going to have for this next card. But yeah, just let's create a little bit of a gap there just for some sportsmanship here. The next one, probably my favorite card of the bunch. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have me on the tee box first. I intimated earlier in the show I can't get off the tee box. So this one's going to be, I think, very difficult. It certainly I think there's a potential for us here to get some mud on our face and look really stupid. It's the 2001 SB Legendary Cuts Honus Wagner autographed, hand numbered to 24 in PSA near mint 8. Iconic cut set, right? There had been previous cut autographs in 99 and 2000, but a minimal amount. And then all of a sudden in 01, Upper Deck really just embraced this. They put their stamp on it. They're like, hey, we're going to come hardcore and dedicate a set basically with all cuts. And so here you have SP Legendary Cuts. Greatest players of all time are in this set, right? Ruth, Jack, Clemente, Garrick, DiMaggio, you name it. Most know this, but we do have a little bit of a crossover gambling audience that's just starting to dip their toes into the water. Effectively, what a cut autograph is, you know, Upper Deck or whatever company would acquire old checks or letters or contracts that were signed by these players. Yeah. And I think that's actually what's on this one because, you know, you look at some of the other versions that have sold. You know, there's other writing on there. There's, you know, some checks. There's some interesting stamping going on. But basically, you know, you'd cut out the autograph, make cards, design around the large autograph. There was a one-of-one Honus Wagner cut auto in 2000. It was the first cut autograph card of his. I have no idea if it's been unearthed. I don't know if you know that either.
Nope.
But this is his first, I would say, base cut auto, short numbered, but actually somewhat obtainable. Hand numbered again to 24 copies. Mm-hmm. Above Honus Wagner's autograph, you have the Stanley Weston archived image, now owned by Getty, that's like used for virtually every single Honus Wagner article or blog or you name it. So it's familiar. Same set, Babe Ruth hand numbered to 7 in an SGC 8.5 sold in the middle of February for $20,400. There's less cut autograph products for Wagner than Ruth, but Ruth is a Yankee. Man, I feel like I'm going to be high here and you're going to prices right me and come in a dollar less. So I have three prices written down and I was just going to visualize them and I'm going to $17,400 is where I'm going here.
Wow, that is a big number. That is a big number.
I had a feeling I could get some mud on my face here.
Yeah,
give us your real number. Give us your real number.
I will give you my real number.
Okay, I feel like, by the way, like just being, well, I shouldn't divulge this before. I also hate that we're talking about this card because it's one I'm potentially in play for. I shouldn't have given you that information either.
Here we go. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All of a sudden, I'm going to 20,000. No, look, this is, for people in the space, Legendary Cuts is a brand that is unbelievably attractive from a baseball card perspective. They are just very cool and unique, the historical nature of it. They always look great. I love the hand numbering on these cards. The only thing that has me less bullish on this than you is the fact that it's out of 24.
Right.
It's not quite as rare as like that Ruth out of 7.
Right. Of course.
It's Wagner, not Ruth. I've got this significantly under where you are.
Okay. You're in the 7-8 range?
I'm at 87.43.
I figured.
Yep. I'm at 87.43. So it's interesting. Like, will it go for 12 or 13 and kind of get in the middle where we're playing the over-under game? Or is it going to go nuts because you and some other guy are going to battle it out?
I'm an owner at 7. Let's just put it that way. Okay. I'm an owner at 7.
Okay. It's a great card, though. So I'm kind of curious. The fact that you're a buyer on this, though, and you put it at 17 in your head worries me a little bit about my number because there might be someone else out there.
It worries me about buying it, too. Because hopefully the owner of this card doesn't have a friend that's listening to this show.
Or you hope I'm right and you get it at a discount, right?
Yes. It's really interesting. Now, the mental gymnastics in my head. And I was talking to Clay about this card earlier, and just that he saw it and was like, are you bidding on this? I said, I'm actually talking about it today. It's very possible. And then as being like the Yankee guy, I didn't bid on the Ruth. Right. And so now I'm having the thought, like, how do you not bid on the Ruth and then bid on the Wagner? So now all of a sudden I'm in my head, and I think you're probably good here. Okay. Let's transition to a wildly different card here.
This is the oddball of the group.
This is the oddball, and I'll just be candid with you. The oddball worked in your favor last week. You beat me on the Noir John Morant
ooh,
laundry cool. tag. Okay, so this is in that same vein, 2022 National Treasures Collegiate Platinum Paolo Banchero, RPA, one of one that comes with the NBA authentication stamp of approval. If you're a Duke fan, or maybe even a Banchero super collector, this might be pretty intriguing. Talk to us a little bit about this one.
Yeah, we've talked about the lack of love for non-professional sports jerseys on card, right? Collegiate cards. This one's kind of unique and different. First of all, it's Duke, which is beautiful. Beautiful to see on a card. It's a color match with the patch and the color on the card, and even the ink that he signed with is blue. He's got an inscription of, quote, in quotes, brotherhood, which I believe is what they said when they played it at Duke. It's a one of one, and the patch is a Nike swoosh. Yes, authenticated by NBA. It's a really aesthetically pleasing card. I usually don't like the look of college cards, but this one's actually pretty cool looking. He's having a great rookie year. It is not game used, but the auto is on card, so there's a positive there. But I like this card. I actually think it's, for a collegiate card, it's one of my favorite ones that I've seen. Obviously, I love Nike being in Oregon, and you know the employee store and the campus is here. So there's that, you know, that factor personally for me at play. But it's a very difficult card to price because of all of that. With how well he's playing, I believe he's going to win Rookie of the Year. I've got this card.
Favorite.
Yeah, exactly. I've got this card at $3,135.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, he is, depending on where you look, like -4,000 to -8,000.
Oh, jeez. I mean, I didn't realize it was that much of a landslide.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So he's going to win it, and not just to reiterate everything you said, but all your points were damn good. I mean, the card's beautiful. I looked at it and I was like, how can I possibly like this? It goes against every fiber in my body.
Same.
But
same.
It's like, it's just this ridiculous, vibrant blue Nike swoosh patch. The autograph is bold. To your point, it has the inscription, just adding another level of rarity to it, although he does sign the Brotherhood frequently. Okay. But it's just, it's more attractive to a Duke fan, Duke super collector. This is the team logos parallel. There is a gold variant to 10, an emerald variant to 5, and then this platinum one of one. Again, not game used, college card. Those two things prevent this from, you know, achieving an out of space number or a number that would mirror how good this damn card looks. But very cool nonetheless. I'm going to puke here because I'm actually over you, wild as that sounds. I'm at $3,300 on the button.
Okay, so we're very close.
We're very close. What kind of put me over the top, I don't know if you saw this or not, there were a couple that sold on a, and I'm not going to say the name, a publicly large auction house, and I'm believing this is the better version. But a Nike swoosh patch did $3,500, and then there was one with a really freaking cool ACC patch that did like $4,000. I kind of feel like we're going to be a couple $100 apart. Like this is going to be close. It's either going to go for $3,000 or it's going to go for $3,500, and like this is very close. So the cards you picked this week, I think, served a purpose. I am certainly, I think, going to look like a bumbling idiot on the middle card there, but I'm okay looking like an idiot.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Damn, that's a ghost! We're gonna highlight a card that hasn't sold in more than a year right now, or is serial numbered to less than 100 copies produced. We're gonna talk about why this card is significant, maybe in terms of hobbies or language or just the overall rarity of it all, and why it's considered a ghost.
Interesting pick this week for the ghost card. 1997 Topps Chrome Refractor, Bulls team of the 90s in PSA 10. This is actually a checklist card. I'm going to let you talk to us on this one. A little bit different of a vibe than we've done for the first 17 shows.
Yeah, most of the ghost cards that we've done in the past have been crazy expensive. And I kind of wanted to bring one that was more affordable to the table and showed that there are cards that are very rare that you can find in the $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 range. And this is one of them. It's a 1997 Topps Chrome Refractor Bulls Championship. It's got Michael Jordan on it. It's got that team picture of them in a PSA 10. This card is only a pop 36. And there hadn't been one to sell since February of 2022. So over a year. It's a really aesthetically pleasing card, in my opinion. I really like the look of the card. I think that, you know, with this being 97 being the last of the 6 championships that Jordan won, it's really cool. You know, they're holding all these trophies in the picture. It's just a pretty card. It's different, right? It is a checklist card, but it's a low pop. These refractors are known for being off center and hard to find in high grade, but there haven't been a ton of these that have been even graded in general by PSA. So it's a really unique card, and you can get this card for around, you know, the $4,000 range. So this week, the ghost card is a more affordable card.
I like it. And again, this is a checklist, and you know, you start to think about this set in general. 97 Topps Chrome, extremely condition sensitive set. Does have the greening capabilities of the inaugural set there, the 96. The card's actually cool as heck, right? I mean, Jordan, Pippen, Rodman are on it. And then you have Mac legend, Ron Harper, who was the 8th overall pick in the 86 NBA draft. I think, to your point, you went with a little bit different of a card that's a lot of people might not know about. It's a checklist, so it's not as revered, but it's, if you're a set collector, certainly one that's very important and I think helps enhance its value. If you're just looking for this card and you're just a Bulls collector and you're like, hey, you know, this kind of takes me back to when they were winning some championships. I love all these guys on here. You can get a raw copy for like $500-$600.
Yeah.
So I like what you did here in terms of it is rare. It doesn't sell often, but the price point is vastly different than any of the cards that we discussed previously in this segment.
Yeah. And to be clear, when we say a checklist too, it's, you know, there's the pretty image on the front that's refracting. And then the back of the card, you know, you've got it's card number 51, but it's got the checklist for the set from the refractor. So it's on the back of the card on the reverse. The front of the card has that very cool image that is when they were at the, I believe it's the, at the parade for the Bulls winning their 6th out of what, 8 championships?
Yep.
Trading cards and memorabilia have seen incredible growth as an alternative investment. The company leading the growth? PWCC Marketplace. PWCC Marketplace runs the largest weekly auction of authenticated sports cards, Pokemon cards, comic books, video games, and memorabilia in the world. PWCC Marketplace also has more than 65,000 items listed in their fixed price marketplace that you can make an offer on right now. Head over to pwccmarketplace.com and see why they're the best option for buying and selling trading cards, memorabilia, and all of your collectibles. So we doing this or are we doing that? You tell me and we'll tell you. We're going to compare two cards right now with similar value that are completely different. Let me give you an example. Let's just say for argument's sake, you have a vintage Mickey Mantle baseball card worth $30,000. But you also have a modern day Joe Burrow rookie card worth $30,000. Which one would you rather have and why? You tell us, we're going to tell you right now.
Goat talk. This week, two of very best in their respective sport. The last card we talked about in the ghost segment includes this gentleman. Talk to us a little bit about the two cards that we're comparing here. The first one, 04 Exquisite, Michael Jordan. It's a three-color patch, BGS 810. It's out of 100, serial numbered. Beautiful, bold autograph. And then you have a card and a player that's near and dear to your heart. 2003 Upper Deck Game Used Tiger Woods Signature Duels. Serial number to 10 in a mint SGC9.
I'm going to be honest. This is one of those weeks where I picked these because I felt obligated to talk about the Tiger Woods card. And it's not a hard decision for me. I'm just going to put...
Well, it's not for me either. I think my answer is going to surprise you. So yeah, I'm end up down the same path here again.
Okay, so... The 04 Exquisite, I will say, is a beautiful card. It's got kind of a smaller patch window. This card has a three-color patch, which is harder to achieve in those small patch windows. But like you mentioned, beautiful, bold, on-card auto. It's 0.5 away from a Beckett 8.5. It is graded to Beckett 8. Serial number 11 of 100. 04 is the first year that they did. It's the second year of Exquisite. The first year they did these in the vertical nature. But a really, really pretty card. And it's the GOAT. It's Jordan. It's 04 Exquisite. So the second year they did it. I really do like this card a lot. And I think that Exquisite in general, like we've talked about before, is undervalued. But what I can't ignore, I just can't ignore it. This 03 Game Used Signature Shirts Tiger Woods dual patch. It has two patch windows on here. One of them is kind of, an aqua colored golf shirt. These are game or tournament used. And the other one is the Sunday Red Tiger, which is just, there's something to be said for having a tournament used Sunday Red on a card. And what's so unique about this, outside of the fact that it's numbered 4 of 10, it's in an SGC 9, he signed it twice. It is signed under both patch windows. So this is a dual signed card of his, numbered out of 10. The auto grade's got a 10. I mean, I don't know if I've seen another Tiger Woods card that he's signed twice in this fashion. It is just a very cool, very unique card. Both of these sold for right around $17,000. The Jordan was about $600 more at $17,400 last week. This Tiger closed for $16,800, and it's worth every single penny, in my opinion. And so I think you know where I'm going, but it's obviously the Tiger.
Really, the only reason this is a debate, aside from what the market is telling us, right, that they're priced pretty damn close, is the massive delta in popularity of sport, right? You have the global game of basketball versus golf, which is currently the seventh most popular sport domestically. And that is the... That's the reason that this kind of racked my brain initially, and then kind of once I dove in, I'm like, ugh. So we're in the lockstep here. And I think the two main distinguishers for me is that there's well over 150 different Michael Jordan exquisite autograph cards. And the data that I see, the research that I've done, and if you're a Tiger Woods super collector out there, please correct me if I'm wrong, this is Tiger Woods' very first dual autograph game use card. And one of the game use pieces, to your point, within this Tiger card is red. And that's the iconic Sunday red. And you know this better than anyone. They seem to sell for a little bit of a premium compared to like other event tournament used color pieces. And so I kind of busted your balls when you sent this. And, you know, it's so nice you had to sign it twice. Maybe I would have, in my mind, preferred a larger single signature in the middle. But now that I'm thinking about this as we're talking about it, the card name is Duel. It potentially, well, I'm 99, according to Beckett, it's his first Duel autograph. And so I think that enhances its value being the first of something. So yeah, I'm with you on this one. It pains me to do it, but here we are, Masters around the corner.
Yeah.
What are the odds? Like, if you had to set the over under on what he's going to shoot for the tournament, it's a course he knows like the back of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
What do you?
He'll make the cut.
He made the cut last time, right?
My guess is, I believe so. My guess is he's top 30.
Top 30.
That's my guess.
Okay.
Yeah. He can hack it around that course and score well. The guy just knows it like you mentioned, the back of his hand. So it is my favorite sporting event to watch. Hands down.
Interesting. Okay.
What's so unique about it is it's the only major in golf they play at the same course every single year.
I do like
that. So you watch it and you learn and you know what every hole is. You know, you start like, oh God, the position of that shot. He should have been the left side of the fairway. He's on the right side. Man, he's going to be blocked out.
Yep.
Can't get to that back pin with that bunker, right? Like you start noticing these things, and then you know where pin placements typically are on Sundays. And so it goes to the history of that event and that course combined with the importance of the Masters. It's just a really neat venue.
I have a guy that dabbles in golf betting. And when I say dabbles, he's one of the more respected golf bettors in the world. And we always seem to do quite well because of the familiarity of that course. I mean, he's able to identify every single player, their weakness, their strength, how it plays to each hole. It's really incredible, and it's one of my favorite events as well. I'm usually first thing Thursday morning cranking it up, and I'm watching virtually every round, which I can't say for any other tournament.
Exactly.
Okay. Talk to us a little bit. You sound much better this week. You took your Flintstone vitamins. You're you're healthy again.
Yeah, I'm back. I drank enough this last week to kill anything in me. How about that?
Really? Talk to us. What else went on this weekend? So first of all, the location of where you reside, not able to bet the NCAA tournament, which, I mean, you're going to have to move. That'd be a no-go for me. Yeah, deal breaker. Then you had a moment of weakness. You ripped some wax. You got a little bit healthier. You drank. Not quite sure what the drink of choice was. Divulge all of that and then maybe important stuff that's going on at PWCC.
Boy. As far as ripping goes, we don't need to get into details of what I ripped, but it was a bloodbath. it's as easy as I can put it. What did I expect? I mean, I've told people not to do it on this show, and here I go, keep ripping. Look, we have a local card shop. I wanted to support them. I hadn't actually been there physically before, so I went in and I, with a couple of my kids, and we bought some wax and we had some fun. Pure entertainment. But outside of that, drank some wine. Actually drank some margaritas this weekend, which is the first time I've done that in a while. You know, kind of with the nicer weather in mind, which isn't here quite yet. But we have the Mint coming up next week. We've talked about it before. If you're in Vegas, you want an excuse to go, the weekend the show's running, come stop by, say hi, let me know you're a fan of the pod. I'm still trying to drag pain out there, but we'll see if that happens.
I'm responsible. Yeah, trying to.
Yeah,
be. Trying
exactly.
To be. It's final four weekend, right?
Final four weekend, indeed. Indeed it is. And we'll do a pod next Monday or next. I mean, it'll be launched next Tuesday, but then we're going to take a couple weeks off. I've got a bunch of travel.
Yep.
Going somewhere sunny. So we will take a quick break. But outside of that, everything's good.
Beautiful. Glad you're feeling better. We'll come back next week. Then a couple vacations for you, which is well deserved based on what I'm hearing over there.
Appreciate that.
Talk next week, bud.
Make sure you follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. Subscribe to Bet the Board and get notified when new episodes of Cardboard Chat air on Tuesdays. And be sure to stop by pwccmarketplace.com for all your collecting needs.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Bet the Board ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. But before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com/survey.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.